We come to love a congregation, the traditions, the history, and especially the people associated with it. And through these people, young and old, known and unknown, we reach out, both backward into history and forward into the future, to link together the generations in this imperfect but blessed community of memory and hope. When I started thinking about the reflection today, one of the things that kept coming back to me is a hospitality mantra that we developed out of a hospitality study group several years ago now, where we looked at hospitality as the original spiritual discipline, that welcoming the stranger. It was very hard to get us away from just thinking about providing sandwiches and coffee and tea and dessert, and that meaning hospitality. But we came up with this phrase, meeting people where they are with what we have to offer. Where they are, and then having something to offer. Hospitality is welcoming the stranger. It's sharing in the gifts of the world for the goodness of life. It's sort of that expression of thanksgiving. The Soul Matters theme for the month, as you heard in the chalice lighting, is memory. They ask, what does it mean to be a people of memory? And in that chalice lighting, it says, we said we are beings emerging from all that has gone before, doing our best to live well in the present as we contemplate and move into the future. And so this week, Thanksgiving is a moment to look back in gratitude for all that has brought us to where and who we are. We say the word Thanksgiving really easily and quickly. But let's pause and take a breath, as we would if we did before a meal. We would pause to give thanks. But what does thanks mean? It's centered in gratitude. It means kindly or grateful thoughts, an expression of gratitude. To give thanks is to pause in a moment of kindness. And to express gratitude is to be appreciative of benefits received, not of my making, but of benefits received. And then to appreciate is to grasp the nature, worth, quality, or significance, the importance to value those benefits received. So in Thanksgiving, we pause and look back. We recognize, remember, and appreciate not only that which we have benefited from, but that from which we are made. We do that so that we might discover and move into thanks and gratitude and grateful thoughts in a way that we feel them connected in our being. The Soul Matters material talked about living on the shoulders of giants, being lifted up by the strength of tradition and ritual, remembering how connected and dependent we are on those who have gone before, even as we just focus on ourselves and how self-made each day feels. If you look at the material, several of the exercises help us reflect on both the good and the bad that has formed us. So in Thanksgiving, we pause in appreciation of elders and ancestors, relatives and friends, traditions and history. It's not just the meal. It's all that went into the meal, into the food and bringing it to us, and then of us being there in that space with the people where we are. I chose the word shouldering as part of the title because we were talking about standing on the shoulders of giants, but because it carries both a sense of responsibility and also a sense of burden. It's a weight, carrying both the joyful connection and the weight of gratitude. For our Thanksgiving to become real, our appreciation and memory must also begin to grasp that appreciation, the nature, worth, quality, and significance of the stories of others on whose shoulders we stand, the stories of the oppressed on whose shoulders we also stand. They are our giants too. the Native American history and experience and exploitation that was part of the European colonization of America, our ancestors who came. The shoulders of slaves whose labor built much of American prosperity that we now benefit from and live in, that ocean in which we live. And those could both be their own reflections for the day, and I'm not going to carry them on further, except to say we need to acknowledge those and have them be a part of our day, shouldering the burden and the responsibility of thanksgiving. Okay, so to bring this back and make it simple, practical, seasonal, personal, and day-to-day, there is real day-to-day heavier lifting that Thanksgiving brings, particularly the meal itself. Not for those of us who just come and sit down and eat it. It requires practical shouldering. It's the beginning of the holidays. It's the beginning of the holiday rush, the holiday tension, this rolling into the future. There are extra things to do. There are extra expectations to live up to. There are extra burdens to take on and carry. The dinners and gatherings and special events don't just happen. Who does most of the heavy lifting for the holidays? That's the word I wrote down. Say it louder. Say it louder. There you go. Women shoulder much of the extra weight of our rituals and traditions. They assume most of the responsibility for the meals. They even take on the expectation of happiness for those who gather. Recognition and appreciation, thanksgiving for the shoulders on which we stand, is a necessary step toward changing the metaphor and the relationship, I would say, from the somewhat hierarchical sense of on the shoulders of others to what I hear is a more relational sense of being, that is, shoulder to shoulder, shouldering. Linked in community and shared respect and presence and common cause, reflect on the picture on the front of the order of service and think about shouldering. Thanksgiving together in right relationship. Gratitude and appreciation given and shared. When we sing the hymn, Lean on Me, what's that, 1021? Lean on Me becomes lean on each other. You can picture them leaning on each other. To belong and to make a difference. If there is a load you have to bear, to shoulder, just call me. Lean on me. How do you lean on somebody? If you leaned into the person next to you, how would it be? Shoulder to shoulder. Lean on me. I've been thinking a lot lately about how to live well and also be in hopeful and sustained engagement in this work for justice and a different world. I've come to think about how most of us are or aren't in relationship with people who are different from the particular us that we inhabit and identify with. And yet I think that is the key to creating the vision of the world we hope for. That's what Parker Palmer wrote in Healing the Heart of Democracy, the book that about 20 groups of us, almost 100 people, studied for the Heart of Hendersonville Project this last summer. He said you have to live the community you are hoping to be a part of. The work for justice and change then is not a burden, but a creation of the life you are hoping for. It is a version of your vision lived as you go, living shoulder to shoulder, as it were. We also realized in our study groups that we have to be in real listening conversation with each other, and that takes something we have very little of, time and presence and patience, all of which are in short supply. We want things to be how we envision they should be or need them to be right now. I've gone back to reread Sharon Welch's book, An Ethic of Risk. Don't worry, I'm not going to get into that much here. But the language she uses for how to be in community that works for justice and change in sustainable ways resonates with this idea of shouldering thanksgiving. The first chapter, entitled The Ethic of Control, begins with the question, How do we work for justice when it seems that only individual well-being is attainable while collective social justice is unreachable? How are we to be in right relationship with others when we can barely keep ourselves together? The second chapter then goes into narratives of healing and transformation, and it's the third that's titled Memory and Accountability. She talks about the Western ethic of control and how we who are middle class cannot easily move from an ethic of control where we expect and demand quantifiable immediate results to an ethic of risk where we are in relationship. The transition from middle class cultured despair and cynicism to joyful engagement and resilient resistance requires memory and accountability, which then may be painful. She says, memory, accountability, and healing are inseparable. You cannot have one without doing the other. She says there is what she calls a complex relationship of memory and political, personal, and spiritual transformation. Our attempts to solve our social problems, she says, are marred by the maintenance of social distance. We have to get to know each other in order to overcome what she calls our fundamental disrespect for the other. Our fundamental disrespect for the other. We have to get to know each other in order to change the world, in order to change our world in right relationship together. Reverend Bruce Marshall is a UU minister, writer, and chaplain at Riderwood Village. It's a retirement community in Maryland. And he has an essay in this summer's UU World magazine that stands as a real-life parable for thinking about right relationship with the other, whether for social justice or family interactions or family health. And it's titled, The Unwanted Gift of a New Chair. There's a picture of this recliner. Here's how he opens it. He says, as a chaplain in a senior residence community, I see many well-intentioned efforts at helping that come up short or fail outright. Just about all of these can be attributed to the same cause, failing to take into account the person we are trying to help. We let our own needs and desires drive us rather than paying attention to the other. He goes on to tell the story of Roger M. Roger M. is a retired attorney in his 90s, and he was telling the story to a group of his contemporaries, and all of them were laughing as if they, well, not as if, because they knew the truth in the story. And the story was that he had an easy chair that he loved, a beat-up old recliner, where he sat to do crossword puzzles, you know, perhaps to watch TV or just to be. And then one day he came home and that chair was gone. In its place was a shiny, new, modern recliner. It did everything. It adjusted to his head. It even moved to greet him and then lifted to send him on his way. It had more features than his old chair had ever imagined, except, and his children had brought that for him as a surprise. It had more features than he ever could have imagined, except, he says, it wasn't comfortable. It wasn't comfortable. It hadn't put in the years necessary to become truly acquainted with its owner. This chair wasn't his chair. But the children, he didn't want to complain because the children had wanted to do something nice for their father. And they had got him a new chair. They'd rid the apartment of the eyesore. And he had to admit that it was cleaner. It's hard to know what was living in the crevices of that old chair. And each time one of them visited, they could view this exhibit of how much they loved him. And then he confided to his group of seniors who nodded in appreciation of his dilemma, I hate that new chair. So So think about this as a parable of what happened there. What the children didn't do. They didn't talk to Roger and ask him if he wanted a new chair. They didn't talk to him about how he felt about the chair or about how they felt about his chair. They might have earlier. But they didn't need to. They knew better what he needed. Think about that in the larger space of interacting in the world with the other. They also probably didn't have the time to take to talk about it. They needed to get it done. I'm guessing he wasn't at the meeting where they decided on the new chair. They met without him. I participated in a meeting 2 weeks ago on race relations where there were 14 white people. They probably met over the phone, all with the best of intentions. But you could picture the time if one of them sat next to the old chair and just pulled up a chair next to him and spent that time getting to know Dad rather than just visiting Dad, getting to know him in the present. Bruce says, in seeking to help another, a loved one, a friend, or a stranger, our actions are guided by our own perceptions of another's situation in life and what, from our perspective, we think this other person may want and need or should want and need. The result might be a new chair, because I certainly wouldn't want to sit in that old thing. Or pressure to take a pottery class, he goes on, because I would love to take a pottery class. Or a surprise party for your next birthday. You're 90, so let's celebrate. I want to celebrate if I make it to 90. Or a covert house cleaning, because I certainly wouldn't want to live that way. We make assumptions about what someone should want and need, and we act on that basis. And here's the part. This evades the hard work of relationship. Taking the time to be present to another, listening, sharing one's own thoughts and feelings in response, asking questions, paying attention to what is said, and accepting it and honoring it. Instead of building an actual relationship, we usually insert what we think this person may want and need or what we want and need. He goes on to talk about, he said, listen to how people talk to the elderly with an excess of cheerfulness. Listen to how perky the publications are. The message that comes through these efforts is our own discomfort. In this example, with aging, but our own discomfort. Jeff Watson, the director of operations at Erickson Living, observed, if we, as younger people in this example, but if we try to make our seniors look happy, talk happy, it's usually less for them and more for us. We like it better when they're happy. We think we're doing a good job when they are happy. We think it's our job to make them happy. And actually, if they don't make us happy by acting happy, we're unhappy with them. It's a parable for how to be with others. The essential principle of what does help is simple, he says. Be present to other people as they are. Meeting people where they are. Be present to other people as they are, not as you want them to be. This means putting aside your own needs and expectations so that you can pay attention to this actual human being who is right here, right now, in front of you. It means giving up on the project of fixing people or jollying them up and instead accepting them. It means regarding the other as human beings. Just that, treating them as you want to be treated yourself, it's very simple, with respect and with kindness. He says that this is a simple formula, but it actually involves trial and error in the practice. And that's why Sharon Welch's book is called An Ethic of Risk. He says, we'll make mistakes, misread situations. We will frequently feel uncertain. This is not a bad thing. We do not control the interaction. This is not a bad thing. The tradition of contemplative spirituality urges us to enter these new situations with openness, becoming empty, rather than entering with the assumption that we know what is good for the person we seek to serve. We should assume an outlook of not knowing. And rather than approaching an encounter with the confidence that we know what we're doing, we should empty ourselves and become present. Bruce's story for the unwanted chair gives new understanding and meaning to the word charity. It now becomes chair-ity. So when you're thinking about that difference of charity and being in right relationship, think about the unwanted chair. Think about how you feel in those situations. Think about that struggle of being the children in that space. Charity. Compassion means caring with, not merely caring for. I'd like to close from the order of service with what I wrote on the back and say we do our best to shoulder our share of the burdens and work for life and love. Yet even our best intentions often seem to create new tensions. But living in right relationship with others means we will strive to be shoulder to shoulder with each other, facing challenges as equals, as allies, as colleagues. Let's take a moment to feel that shoulder-to-shoulder strength of the beloved community. Sort of lean each way. If you have somebody next to you, just lean each way. There you go. Look at that. Put your shoulder, there you go, shoulder-to-shoulder. How does that feel? Now, push your shoulders back. Just push them back. Unless it hurts. Push them back. Open your hearts to the risk and the possibilities of being with people. Not in controlling people, but of being with people, with others, as they are this Thanksgiving, being present. And as you move your shoulders back, take in the courage of an open heart, that courage beyond the illusion of control, and then feel shoulder to shoulder, heart to heart. May it be a warm and bountiful day.